The science is controlling me to listen to WMNF Tampa.
88.5 WMNF wants to hear from local artists like you. If you're a poor around Tampa Bay, go to our website at WMNF.org. From there, click on Ports of the Month under the Programming tab. If you're selected, your poem will be broadcasted on our airwaves. Be one of WMNF's first Ports of the Month by going to WMNF.org.
Good morning, my esteemed listeners. Ordinarily at this time, I would have Dr. Fred Harvey on the phone for you right now. But as I speak, the good doctor is aloft on a flight to a destination unknown. But I do have a sweet treat for you. By popular demand, I'm going to replay his August 23rd Health and Nutrition Show, where he discusses hormone and estrogen needs and longevity. The bitter side to this largesse is that we are not going to be able to take any calls or answer your emails. Today's show will be like a private podcast, just for you. So, to repurpose a line from the movie All That Jazz, showtime. Let's get started. Welcome to Health and Nutrition with Dr. Fred Harvey here on WMNF Tampa. Today, his topics of discussion will be hormone and estrogen needs and longevity. Well, good morning, Dr. Fred. I hope that you had an exquisite weekend, and I can see that you've got a pretty good show for our listeners today, so let's get started.
Let's do that. It was a wonderful weekend, and I hope yours was, too.
It was. Thanks for asking.
So, little update. We just heard from NPR that the Pfizer shot has been approved by the FDA as an official drug, no longer on emergency use authorization. Is a fully-fledged, approved FDA tool that may convince more people to get a shot.
Let us hope.
Either way, I mean, I think that we have the evidence that masks are as effective as shots. The problem is people won't wear masks either. There's this Proud Boy group of individuals that feels that they are separate from the rest of us and don't need to work with society. And therefore, they won't wear a mask, which helps other people, nor will they get a shot, which helps other people. Either way works. I don't mind wearing a mask forever. Asians have done it for years. In fact, that's why in Asia, they don't have much of this virus going on. When we peaked out at 300,000 cases a day, I think Japan was at 1,000 cases a day. Taiwan has no more cases. South Korea is way behind us. They still have some. New Zealand has no virus. Masks work. We should use one or the other or both. But masks work and are effective, and if people would just do it, we could stop this pandemic in March of 2020. But they won't do it, sadly. But no more news on Novavax that I know of. So we have one approved drug and several others, and we have lots of masks in store. So why don't we put masks back on? Mask up, everybody. Remember, hashtag mask up. It's the truth. It's the real thing. It's the only thing that's going to end us because we know that we are not going to get 100%. We may get to 70% inoculation. It's hard to tell because there's a lot of resistance. But masks work without the shot. So everybody mask up, and we can end this thing. So I would like to talk a little bit about estrogen. The conference I went to 2 weeks ago or attended via live stream was excellent. And got some really good new backup for my opinion, which has been women need estrogen replacement to maintain their health after menopause. Not a lot. Don't have to have pregnancy levels, but estrogen is good. Why would creation give us a natural molecule of intracellular communication and make it carcinogenic? So, you know, this whole psychosis that goes on now related to hormone replacement therapy has actually started in about 2001 when the results of an important study called the Women's Health Initiative were published. They looked at 27,000 women between 1993 and 1998. They were broken into two groups, those with hysterectomy, those without hysterectomy. Those with hysterectomy were given conjugated equine estrogen, which is branded as Premarin, and it is horse urine concentrate, pregnant mare urine concentrate. That's where you get the name Premarin. And those who still had a uterus were given the conjugated equine estrogens along with medroxyprogesterone acetate. MPA is also known as Provera, and it is a synthetic progestin. It looks like progesterone, but it's not. And horse estrogens look like human estrogens, but they're not. They do work on the estrogen receptor, though. They're very potent. They do a good job, actually. And the reason that the women who had uteruses were given medroxyprogesterone acetate is because it will prevent uterine cancer. When a person is given unopposed estrogen with a uterus, they get uterine cancer generally. So you have to use the other hormone to balance it out. Even the women without the uterus should have the, some progesterone, because it balances it out in the rest of the body too. It modulates how the breast cells listen to the signal of estrogen. So when this was published, it showed that there was an increased risk of breast cancer when they initially looked at this data in both groups, but primarily in the one that had the combination of the medroxyprogesterone acetate. It is a poison. Should not be used in any human or any animals for that matter. So Dr. Love was one of the authors of the Women's Health Initiative. I heard her speak on NPR many years ago, and she said that this study was done on horse estrogen and a synthetic progesterone. And she warned that we could not extrapolate this data to any other hormone therapy. But she said, I guarantee you that my colleagues in the media will do so. So what happened? Her colleagues in the media went all over this. And based on one study, demonized hormone replacement therapy, completely changed the playing field for the last 20 years, damaging women in the meantime. 40 million women were on HRT in 2001. It's down to 5 to 8 million now. And there's only one study, though. And the author said, do not extrapolate. So when this was reevaluated after 20 years, I guess it was last year they published a review of this, they showed that the estrogen alone group had a 23% reduction in breast cancer, actually, when they looked at the whole group alone, rather than lumping it all together. But the estrogen plus synthetic progestin group had a 29% increase in breast cancer. And the ladies that were on the estrogen compound alone had a 44% reduction in death from breast cancer. And the effects persist 20 years out, because they reviewed these women at this point and they found out that there was no significant issue. So this initial study was flawed in the way it was interpreted, and also was flawed in its single result, because there are many other studies that show that this is not a problem. From 1999, MD Anderson, one of the greatest cancer institutes on the planet, showed there was no increase of recurrence of breast cancer in those who had breast cancer on HRT. For years afterwards, Fred Hutchinson Cancer Center, 2001, published in the Journal of the National Cancer Institute, breast cancer, lower recurrence and lower mortality on HRT. 2002, fewer deaths and survivors on HRT. That's survivors of breast cancer. 2002, primary invasive breast cancer survivors. There was no increase in cancer on HRT. This is over a 5 to 8 year period. 2003, University of California, no difference on HRT and recurrence. And in 2001, University of Texas, even in those women who had estrogen receptor positive breast cancers, there were no breast cancer deaths. And 2018, estrogen and progesterone after breast cancer improve well-being and lengthen lives. They did a 24-year-long follow-up of breast cancer. They had longer disease-free survival. So the people who weren't on HRT had shorter disease-free survival. They had recurrences earlier. We know that progesterone actually turns off some of the estrogen receptors so that the tumor or cell cannot listen to estrogen and grow more and produce more. So progesterone has been shown in one study to reduce metastases. And it also has evidence of turning off these estrogen receptors. My issue with this is that the standard of care currently is it's not reflecting current data. So if we consider that we trust doctors to be practicing evidence-based medicine, why are they not practicing evidence-based medicine in oncology and in menopause with women who've had breast cancer? It's a very strange world, but it's built on a legal framework that is highly litigious. In other words, if a doctor prescribes breast cancer, if prescribes estrogen, there's a good possibility that if any complication would occur with breast cancer, that doctor could be sued. So the legal atmosphere prevents proper practice of medicine in many cases. And so we really need to think about what this means for future health. The women that were on longer duration estrogen therapy, recently published, I think this one was, I think this was 2019, yes, Cache County, Arizona. Many, many good studies are coming out of this Cache County study. They looked at a bunch of women, here's 2,000 women who were dementia-free at baseline. They found that the people that were on estrogen and hormone replacement, especially in the older women, and the longer they remain on it, they have higher cognitive status later in life. And we found this in the treatment of Alzheimer's, looking at the Bredesen protocol, the Bredesen model for reversing cognitive decline. We know that balancing hormones is a key part of keeping the brain operating at efficiency.
As a reminder, you are listening to a pre-recorded special encore presentation of Health and Nutrition with Dr. Fred Harvey here on WMNF Tampa, 88.5 on your FM dial. Because of the nature of pre-recorded shows, we will not be taking any calls or answering any new emails today. Dr. Fred is actually in the air right now while his show is on the air. So, stay healthy until next week when Dr. Fred comes back and can answer your questions about what's ailing you. Now let's return to the broadcast.
So, that said, I'd like to open up to some questions about estrogen. But in the meantime, I do have an email that came in right as we started the show. The past few weeks, you mentioned how well alpha-lipoic acid worked for neuropathy, and I got excited to try. Upon further research, several websites mentioned you should not take it if you are taking medication for hypothyroidism, as it could lower the effectiveness of the medication. So the way I look at that is that if you have a medication like thyroid, and there may be an interaction. However, the thing you want to do is actually very healing. I would actually do the healing thing and stay with the 600 milligram 2 to 3 times a day. I would not take the alpha-lipoic acid with the thyroid hormone because it may bind it. That's a possibility. What I would do is take it separately, and then within 3 or 4 weeks of starting the alpha-lipoic acid, I would go to the primary care doctor and ask for help with a new thyroid test to see if you have changed your bioavailability or efficacy of the thyroid hormone. That would give us the idea as to whether or not this has been interacting poorly for you. I think it's really worth taking, and I think it's really worth considering getting another test. Well, do we have a station ID?
Well, we can. We can let people know that you all are listening to WMNF Tampa and the Health and Nutrition Show with Dr. Fred Harvey. And I do have Tim and Terry on the line, so let's get started with Tim.
Let's do that.
Hey, guys. Morning.
Hi, Tim.
Thank you for having me on.
What do you have today?
Also, thank you for also having this conversation this morning. Happy Monday to everybody. My question is about my wife, my beautiful wife, 36, mother of 3 children, 5 and under. She's just recently started having trouble with insomnia, waking up in the middle of the night and really struggling to get any sleep. Just over the last couple of weeks, she thinks it may be sort of early menopause, but hormonal changes in general. I wondered if you had any thoughts on perhaps estrogen or any you know hormonal adjustments. She's very hesitant to take any supplements like melatonin, but she's the strongest person I know, so I'd love to help her out if I could.
Couple of questions for you. How old is she?
She's 36.
And when was the last child born?
That would be nearly 2 years ago.
2 years. Okay, good. So she's past the postpartum depression area. However, still things could be happening. The postpartum period does create some disruptions, and sometimes it resets the thyroid, and there could be thyroid problems that persist for a while afterwards, and thyroid can directly impact sleep. I would get that checked, for one thing, and since it's 2 years out, it may not be a bad idea to get a hormone check. There's a company that I really like to look at hormone metabolism, especially when it deals with insomnia and fatigue, because it looks at adrenals and melatonin. It's called the Dutch test, D-U-T-C-H. It's a urine test that gives a really accurate picture. And if you want to do the adrenals fully, it does a saliva test as well. I really like that test. If your wife could access that, it would give her a lot of information. But in general, melatonin is really a good chemical. And if getting to sleep is a problem, melatonin is very helpful. So 3 milligrams of melatonin would be useful to try at night if getting to sleep is a problem. If sleep continuity is the issue, then I would try some an amino acid called GABA, gamma-aminobutyric acid, available at many health food stores as PharmaGABA. I personally, when I'm having stressful times or disrupted sleep, I take 500 to 1,000 milligrams at bedtime. They come in 250-milligram capsules, and you could vary that. It's highly effective, and it really is calming for the nervous system. How do those suggestions help?
That's really, really helpful. Thank you, Dr. Harvey. Thank you very much, both of you, for having me on, and go Rays.
Thank you. Have a great day, Tim.
You too.
Looks like we got a little bit of reaction from the last shout out with the number. I do have Terry here. We'll get to her in a second. Dan got another one coming on in. So here's Terry for you.
Good morning, Terry.
Hey, Dr. Harvey. I'm so glad you're doing this program because there is a lot of bad information out there. I'm particularly concerned about the cognitive effects of estrogen loss, which is something that most doctors just don't even seem to pay any attention to at all.
Yes.
My question, though, is a quick one. I know that when somebody does have estrogen-positive breast cancer, one of these standards of care is to get them on an estrogen blocker, like tamoxifen. Given everything that you just said, is that still what they should be doing?
Frankly, I'm not a fan of tamoxifen, although it does have good data for preventing some recurrences. There's a better medication out there that I've been able to convince a couple of oncologists to allow my patients to switch over to, because it is a negotiation we have here because they have a mission and it's tough to deter them from their mission. There is a medication called raloxifene. It's branded Evista, and this medication is like tamoxifen. However, it actually has less adverse effect. It actually promotes good bone health while at the same time preventing uterine cancer and preventing breast cancer. It's really a good choice, but honestly, I think that once you are disease-free, you're post-treatment and ready to go, I think that actually a judicious use of estrogen and progesterone are useful. But again, go back to the Dutch test. The Dutch test has an estrogen metabolism assessment, and what it looks at is how your body's detoxification system in your liver works to get rid of extra estrogen. Carcinogenesis or carcinogenic properties of estrogen are not from estrogen itself. It's from the excretory metabolites. And specifically, 4-hydroxyestrone is created by a enzyme in the liver called cytochrome 1B1. And if you have a revved up cytochrome 1B1, you make a lot of that, and it is actually pro-cancer. But it's not just for breast. It can actually change DNA anywhere because it's no longer estrogen. It's an intercalating agent, which is a DNA misread agent. So it's really a problem if we have that. And we can stop doing some of that metabolism by using resveratrol and curcumin and olive oil and green tea and broccoli extract sulforaphane. These will all work on that area of concern. But get a Dutch test to find out if you have risk in that area before you start doing any estrogen.
Sounds interesting. Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Terry.
Let's go to Carol here for you, Dr. Fred. Hey there, Carol.
Hello, Carol.
Hi, how are you?
Hi. Excellent. How are you?
Good. I have a quick question for you, please. I was taking estrogen and progesterone with testosterone added, and it was a compound through a pharmacy, and it was a troche or something like that. However you say that. Anyway, I recently, probably about 2 months, got off of it because my levels really weren't showing. But what I'm hearing from you is I probably should get back on that. And what is your, what do you think about the testosterone being added? Is that harmful at all?
So, good questions all. I'm not a fan of troches or troches or whatever you want to call them. I don't like the sublingual delivery because you swallow most of it and then it goes through your liver. For estrogen, that is. I prefer to use topical estrogen and topical testosterone if I'm going to use it. In women, I found that testosterone isn't as necessary if we use DHEA because women are very efficient at converting DHEA into testosterone. Men tend to turn DHEA more into estrogen, so we don't use super high doses in men, but we can push the testosterone in women with the use of that DHEA and progesterone because progesterone supports the production of the androstenedione and the testosterone through the hormone cascade, essentially. So if you give the upstream hormones like DHEA and progesterone, you need to give less estrogen and testosterone. And I find that once I put an estrogen patch on or topical estrogen cream, that combination of three without the testosterone usually does a very good job. And okay. I like topical estrogen, oral progesterone, because I want the progesterone to go through the liver if the person has difficulty sleeping. If not, topical progesterone is fine. I don't like to use topical testosterone as much because it often will cause a hairy patch on the woman's arm.
Oh, great. Okay. I don't want that.
No. How's that work?
That is perfect. Thank you very much. Excellent. I appreciate it.
You're so welcome.
All right. You have a great rest of your day.
You too.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, Bill, I have a good email here.
Go for it.
What the heck are monoclonal antibodies? So that's a good question. Monoclonal means one clone. And what that refers to is that you're making one antibody to one thing from one source. Humans make monoclonal antibodies apparently. When we get multiple myeloma, one subset of our white blood cells starts making antibodies of one variety. And it's a way we can recognize multiple myeloma. However, the ones you're talking about are obviously the ones being used as Regeneron or as Regeneron's product to treat coronavirus. These are actually made in the laboratory, and they actually look like the antibodies that our body makes against the coronavirus spike protein. And so the lab is making a vast amount of this very specific anti-coronavirus antibody. And then it's put in solution and infused, just as if your white blood cells would be making it, you just get an infusion of it. So what it does is, like a magnet, it goes through and scoops up all of the coronavirus that it can find. And the binding is generally irreversible, so it's just stuck to all the coronavirus. The coronavirus can't get into your cells, it can't replicate, and so it puts an end to the infection. And that's what monoclonal antibodies are and about currently. And to follow up, Dr. Harvey, is the Regeneron treatment the governor of Florida is pushing also under emergency use authorization? And what are the risks versus getting a vaccine? Regeneron, I believe, is emergency use authorization. I have not looked that one up. It seems to be highly effective. It seems like there are very few risks for using this. Probably the usual things of adverse reactions like fusion reactions, allergy, and then you could probably have the post infusion reaction of having the inflammatory condition of the virus being isolated and killed. So I don't think risks are really high. I think, and also it doesn't appear that risks are really that high with getting the vaccine either. Seem to be higher than a flu shot, but still in the 0.01%, I think, range, which is lower than the death rate of coronavirus itself, apparently, currently. Yeah, I think that Regeneron is actually an option, and you have to do it before day 10. You have to do it with mild symptoms only. No one in the hospital gets it because if you're serious or moderate, it may actually worsen the condition, apparently. Do we have any phone?
As quiet as angel wings here, so go on with a couple of the emails. I think we'll get some good stuff there.
Michelle asks, I am 52 with mixed connective tissue disease and systemic lupus overlap. Should menopause at 37. After 20 years on oral contraceptives, I have gotten different answers from all of my specialists. So it appears that with the current data that using a hormone replacement is a really good idea, especially if you went through menopause at 37. And that's really early. So you have lots of years of hormone absence and should really look at getting a boost, essentially. So I would get hormone testing. Many doctors don't do that before they start on postmenopausal hormones. I like testing to find out where the level is. I like to retest and find out where it's gone. And I also like that Dutch test to look at estrogen metabolism and see if we're actually creating a cancer risk in this situation. And again, which is best? I like the topical estrogen because it avoids first-pass liver metabolism. That way you can use lower doses, and it works great for the progesterone. I think DHEA is better orally because then it can be utilized as the body wants it to, turning it into cortisol or androstenedione or estrone. And that way we can kind of spread the hormone around as needed, because DHEA is a reservoir hormone. It's something that the body keeps on board to use in a lot of different areas. it specifically doesn't have a lot of effect that we have actually been able to elucidate for itself. It is not something that seems to affect specific areas. It just seems to be available for the body to create other hormones out of. And so it's really important for in stress. You know, Norman Shealy 30 years ago did a study on a few patients. It was pretty impressive. He was forward thinking about this one at that point. He found that when you travel in an airplane, at the end of the trip, your DHEA is plummeted by 50%. And so it puts you at more risk for getting a cold and being more stressed, maybe even disrupting your sleep. So it makes sense to take DHEA on the day that you fly, maybe the day before and the day after, to get your DHEA levels back up. And because stress or travel is stressful in and of itself, if you're not in your usual location, taking a little bit of DHEA every day during the trip is not a bad idea either.
Let me give out the phone number again, give you 30, 40 seconds to look at some emails, and I can see we're going to have a phone call with us in a second. So let's do this and come on back to your show. As a reminder, you are listening to a pre-recorded special encore presentation of Health and Nutrition with Dr. Fred Harvey here on WMNF Tampa, 88.5 on your FM dial. Because of the nature of pre-recorded shows, we will not be taking any calls or answering any new emails today. Dr. Fred is actually in the air right now while his show is on the air. So, stay healthy until next week when Dr. Fred comes back and can answer your questions about what's ailing you. Now let's return to the broadcast. Okay, Dr. Fred, go on.
You ready to talk to Kevin from Venice?
Absolutely.
Hey there, Kevin.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Dr. Fred.
Yeah.
My wife had breast cancer about 15 years ago.
Yes.
2 years later, she went into menopause.
Yeah.
We went to a seminar on bioidentical hormone replacement. She did the saliva test with a lab out of Oregon and was going to go on the bioidentical, have it compounded.
Yes.
But her OB-GYN had a fit saying, no, your breast cancer was estrogen positive. You can't do that. You just have to suffer.
Yes. That is the hands-down, blunt, and uneducated answer that current physicians are using and have for 20 years since the Women's Health Initiative. It's a sad thing, but they're not paying attention to the data that refutes that attitude.
Would it behoove her to look into the bioidentical again?
Well, bioidentical is all I've been using since 1992. When I found out there was an option other than conjugated pregnant mare urine estrogens, I switched over to bioidentical estradiol. I think bioidentical simply means that it's like in the body, and so that is quite available and hasn't been for years, and I would consider that. Also consider, because she has had breast cancer, getting the Dutch test to make sure her estrogen metabolism is good, and find a functional medicine doctor that would support her decision.
Well, we're actually in Venice, so we're right by you.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Have a wonderful day. Bye.
You as well.
Still quiet here, so what have you got for us from the email world?
Elsie says, Dr. Harvey, I really enjoy your show. Thanks for the dosing info on GABA. I bought some, 125 milligrams, and I found little effect with one or two. Also had some magnesium and taurine in it. I always learn so much from you. I'll try upping the dose. Good idea. And the magnesium and taurine do support that. Taurine actually supports the effect of the GABA receptor, where the GABA molecule attaches inside the brain and it affects energy.
You broke up on us there at the end. If you could repeat the last 30 seconds or so.
So GABA also is supported by magnesium and taurine. Taurine supports the effect of the GABA receptor in the brain, where the GABA affects its calming influence. And so this is a really good combination she was able to come up with. Here's another one from Jeff. I heard you mention that the Pfizer vaccine has been FDA approved. I must confess that I'm very dumb because I thought all vaccines that are currently being administered have been FDA approved. Yes, that is a misconception for many people. These all the inoculations that are out there, Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, AstraZeneca, that are available in this country, are all emergency use authorized, meaning that they were not officially approved. They hadn't gone through the official FDA approval process, which usually takes 3 to 4 years. They got it done in 3 to 4 months. And so the approval now is that the FDA has accepted the amount of data that's come out in the Pfizer vaccine to say that it is safe and effective, and now it's an official drug. So rather than being completely free in the future, the Pfizer now has authorization to charge for it. This is about economics. Here's another one from Mr. Bridges. Lily, you mentioned testosterone. I was taking it, cream on the scrotum, in combo with over-the-counter DHEA and over-the-counter DIM. DIM is a supplement called diindolmethane, the broccoli extract that helps metabolism of hormones and helps reduce the amount of estrogen in the system. And he says it sounds like he should drop the DHEA if he's trying to avoid estrogen production. Well, that's a generic kind of blanket approach to it. What I prefer is to actually test the levels and see where they are, because a lot of other things come into play. And I do use DHEA on men, smaller doses. Many bodybuilders were taking 400 or 500 milligrams a day, which is the problem. 25 or 50 milligrams a day, I've not seen be a problem in most men except for those who use too much alcohol. And how would he best maximize current health benefits from testosterone? Well, one thing is to use it never below the waist. If you put testosterone down below the waist, you're going to send it through the liver for first-pass metabolism and reduce some of its efficacy. You want to put it on the shoulder, inside or outside the arm, along the flank, and upper abdomen above the waist. And those are all good places to use it if you're using topical testosterone.
Ready to go for a phone call from Nancy in St. Pete?
Let's do that.
Hi.
Good morning.
I wanted to know if progesterone is still beneficial to women who don't have a uterus.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because progesterone actually communicates with your breast tissue, your brain tissue, skin, hair, nails, and bone. Progesterone is one of the first things I use to help get bone stronger, because we know that it is what's called a bone trophic hormone. In other words, it makes bone grow, signals the correct things to the bone, as well as estrogen does. And so I think progesterone has been shown to help with mood, sleep, the quality of your hair, the strength of your bones. I don't think there's any reason for you not to take it.
Great. And a comment on DHEA, I found that it helped with the urinary leakage I had when I was taking Premarin and Provera. I did the Premarin and Provera for 8 years, and then I switched to the Bioidentical, and it rejuvenated me 20 years. It was amazing. I think the FDA doesn't want us on these things because it keeps us healthy and makes us live longer.
That is an interesting comment. Living long could cost Medicare a lot of money.
Yes, and Social Security.
That too. So, an interesting point, my dear. Have a great day.
You too.
Nothing here, so let's hear some more emails, okay?
Rachel and Bay are asking, hey, Dr. Harvey, thanks for the show. Rachel must have just entered menopause, and she's been taking some topical estrogen and oral progesterone, and she would love to find out where to get the Dutch test. That's easy. It's dutchtest.com. You may need a doctor to order it, but I am really not sure. They do have at-home kits. So you can probably do your own. I do them out of the office, but yeah, it looks like you just buy one. So you could pick up your own and then find a doctor to interpret it with you. I am not allowed to advertise, Rachel, so I can't tell you the rest of the question. But I think that you do need a good test to find out if you're taking the right amount of hormone, and you need a doctor to help you adjust the ratios of the things you're taking, because it's really amazing how good you can feel on these, and how it does take a bit of time to get you into that zone, because everybody's body is different, has different enzymes and different ways of metabolizing. We eat different foods, and do different exercise and things that will change the way our bodies deal with these additional chemicals. And so, yes, it really behooves you to find a doc to talk about this. Do we have anybody on the line, though?
Nah, it's as quiet as a mouse whisper here.
Quiet at the moment.
As a reminder, you are listening to a pre-recorded special encore presentation of Health and Nutrition with Dr. Fred Harvey here on WMNF Tampa, 88.5 on your FM dial. Because of the nature of pre-recorded shows, we will not be taking any calls or answering any new emails today. Dr. Fred is actually in the air right now while his show is on the air. So, stay healthy until next week when Dr. Fred comes back and can answer your questions about what's ailing you. Now let's return to the broadcast.
There have been some interesting things being emailed to me from friends and clients. There is so much hyperbole out on the airwaves about our current predicament. There's so much hype and so much weirdness. I am very upset about vaccine mandate. It is my body, my choice. And I know that my choice to wear a mask wherever I go is as effective as shots. The problem is we have a lot of people that are not wearing masks. They're being inappropriately ignorant of those around them. Even those who have had inoculations are able to transmit the virus so they get it. And people who have had the inoculation can still get this Delta and can still transmit it. They may be pre-symptomatic, asymptomatic, or mildly symptomatic, but they can still do it. Everyone needs to continue to wear masks indoors. I see it not happening in a lot of places, and this is making it difficult for us to control the pandemic. Masks work. Masks are the most effective tool. We have evidence from around the globe that masks stop this process. New Zealand has no virus. They are able to control it. They are able to control their borders much better than we are also. But if everybody here is masked, we can find out how to mask the ones coming across the border. Masking is the most effective tool because we are not getting everybody inoculated. It's obvious this is not happening. We need to stop the delusion about inoculation and remind everyone that mask is really important and mask mandates should be happening everywhere. We can end this with a global mask mandate because we're never going to get shots in everybody. We know that. It's delusional to think that we will. We might get to 70%, but considering that 70% immunized still means that those people can transmit to other people, the severity of the disease is going to go down, but we still have a problem. And that is that people won't mask. It's the solution. It's been proven in other countries. It is the answer. So please mask up.
I've got Rachel here with a question for you, Doctor.
Good morning, Rachel.
Good morning. How are you?
Fantastic. How are you?
Good. I have, I'm a two-time cancer survivor. I had a hysterectomy in 1979, and then I was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2001 and had one of my breasts removed. The question is, you know, what hormones should I or not should be taking or not taking? I had 28 lymph nodes removed when, you know, I had the breast cancer. And since then, I haven't had any, you know, hormonal treatment. So I'm questioning whether I should be taking progesterone and maybe something else hormonally.
Well, the evidence that was presented to me at this last conference is pretty solid that you should be on estrogen and progesterone.
And
not synthetic progesterone. Bioidentical progesterone, bioidentical estradiol. Some people like to do blends of estradiol and estriol. I don't think there's any real need to do that because your body makes estriol from estradiol. So if you get a good amount of that and you get your hormones checked regularly and you check for carcinogenesis, I think you're on the right path. But you do need to have a doctor monitor this and advise you on it. So find a good functional medicine doctor. There are several in the Tampa area that do hormone therapy. And, yeah, I think you'll be benefited.
Okay, I really appreciate it. I have a doctor's appointment next month, so I'll, you know, ask about this. I really appreciate what you presented.
You're very welcome.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too.
I'm going to remind our listeners that they're listening to WMNF Tampa, the Health and Nutrition Show with Dr. Fred Harvey. And Lamar's getting a little lonely back there waiting for y'all to call. The number here is 813-239-9663. Or you can send an email to dj@wmnf.org or continue texting us on yourself or your smartphone at 813-433-0885. And hopefully that'll kick some things on in for us, Dr. Fred. And you've got some emails, I guess?
I do. In fact, I just got texted by one of my colleagues. Oh, by the way, there were 164 cases in New Zealand yesterday. Well, that's actually pretty impressive for New Zealand, because usually they shut it right down. But I doubt that that's going to go much beyond that 164 when we're at, what, 35,000 or something today? I can't remember. So let's see. Here's a good one. Please go over taking 2.5 milligrams of medroxyprogesterone with estradiol. Did I mention medroxy is toxic? Yes. Medroxyprogesterone causes heart attack, stroke, dementia, and cancer. It increases your risk of getting breast cancer 30%. So I think you should get rid of anybody who's taking medroxyprogesterone, otherwise known as Provera. Depo-Provera, it's a poison that they give to young women as a once every 3 months birth control. I watched it devastate the personalities and lives of women who've had this poison injected into them. And taking it daily, it just increases your risk of breast cancer, stroke, heart attack, and dementia. Medroxyprogesterone is poison. I can't say it enough. Do not take Provera. It shouldn't be prescribed. We have enough evidence that it's actually a poison. I don't know why it's on the market. Here's another one, 25-year-old vaccinated and otherwise healthy woman, 6 to 7 days, sink in bed with cold symptoms. At what point to go to emergency room? Well, if it's possibly coronavirus, going to the emergency room is important if you do get difficulty breathing. If the fever will not go down after, say, 7 days, if it won't be controlled with some Advil or Tylenol. And that could be actually the Delta variant, even though the person was inoculated. Usually, very sick doesn't occur if you've had the inoculation. So this could be something else. Here's one from Merrill. Dr. Harvey, I love your show. I'm 73. I used typical estrogen progesterone for many years, stopped about 2 years ago. Should I go back to using it again? Haven't had osteopenia, haven't had bone density in about 10 years. Actually, you know, if you're feeling great and you're 73, you probably made it through the worst part of it, but it seems that the longer you take them, the better you are. You took them for many years. That may have conferred you the benefit, because what they found out in the Women's Health Initiative, when they looked back at it, the women that used it for 8 years and then went off of it actually had benefits 20 years later. So you may not need any more. It's about timing. And the timing is you want to do it close to menopause, and you want to do it for years after menopause. That really helps a lot. If you do it later, there's more chances of more problems, because you've not got to the system at the time that it most needed it. So you're going into menopause, you're feeling perimenopausal, get your hormones tested, consider going on hormone replacement right then and stay on it for as long as you can tolerate it.
All right. Well, that works a little bit, giving on out the number before. I've got Pat and Levi here in about 10 more minutes of the show. So let's get started with Pat.
Hello, Pat.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
I can.
Great. Hey, a 66-year-old friend of mine had both of her breasts removed due to cancer about 4 or 5 months ago. And, of course, she had the COVID shots before her surgery and around the time that she was taking her chemotherapy. But last week she told me that she has caught COVID, and she said the doctors said that she could strengthen her body against COVID by taking, I think she said, vitamin D and I don't know, other vitamins. Have I missed somewhere in this whole process certain just over-the-counter vitamins or minerals, whatever we should be taking against COVID, to be healthy against COVID?
Yes, Pat. I have a whole list posted on my website. I've talked about it numerous times here. A basic program for prevention would be D3.
vitamin D3, 5,000 units a day, quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N tablet, 500 milligrams twice a day, resveratrol if you want it, curcumin is a really good thing to add in, but D3 and quercetin are really good. Andrographis is another herb that actually is very potent for antiviral. One andrographis a day could help. Elderberry helps to boost the immune system. Eating oats and mushrooms, they have something called beta-glucan in it. Those two things, eaten on a daily basis, raise your viral killing cell ability. If you go into actual coronavirus and need treatment, taking multiple doses of the quercetin, curcumin, increasing D3 to 50,000 units for 2 or 3 days, and then cutting back to your regular 5,000 can be of value, and adding more of the andrographis, taking multiple doses a day of that are very helpful. And all of these things actually reduce the severity and duration of this virus. All of my clients that have been on this protocol, I have not had anybody go beyond moderate disease. My staff members, I've had 4 now that have gone through coronavirus, and they've done quite well on this type of protocol.
Carcinogen tablet? How do you spell carcinogen?
Quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N.
Okay, and by the way, I just found my note. The doctor told her to take vitamin D, and you specifically said D3. He told her vitamin C and zinc. That's what he told her. I didn't hear the vitamin C and zinc from you.
Zinc and C are helpful. They're a good baseline. I don't think they're hugely impactful here. These other things, because this is a vascular inflammation problem, vascular inflammation is turned down by these kinds of things like the quercetin, et cetera.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
You will.
Hey there, Dr. Fred. You got some more emails for us?
I do. What are my thoughts on the natural flavor in the popular carbonated water? Well, those are probably, from what I've read, and I've tried some of those carbonated waters, they're usually just fruit extracts, fruit flavors. And so I think they're probably okay. Here's the one, open quote, natural flavor, close quote, that I know is the raspberry flavor extracted from beaver anal glands. But it is natural. I think, yeah, most of these things are good. If you really want to be safe about it, look for ones that say organic natural flavor, organic fruit flavor, things like that, to keep it the healthiest. How are we doing there, Bill? Any calls coming in?
No, not at the moment. I guess you could call.
I got another email just now. I am a 67-year-old woman, menopause 11 years ago. Do I need hormone therapy? I'm getting kind of spacey at times and forgetful. Otherwise, I'm good. Do I need hormone therapy? Susie, I think that hormone therapy is a good idea for you. You are actually, you know, a bit post-menopause, but you're very young. So I think actually you could have some improvement in cognitive health doing this. But again, I would get hormone tests and have a doctor monitor you while you go on to this, because I think it's really useful. We're seeing so much benefit as the aging brain gets a little bit of help. It does so much better. And this is true for men as well. Men who, for medical reasons, lower their testosterone below the reference range really benefit from getting some testosterone on board. If they are only in the lower normal range, I prefer not to use testosterone at that point, but instead try to do things that enhance testosterone production. There's some evidence that doing squats and lunges, strength training for your lower extremities, actually increases your testosterone. You may get a 10% boost out of that. Decreasing alcohol intake increases testosterone. Decreasing stress increases testosterone. Improving glucose control, sugar control, and responding to diabetes appropriately, that will actually raise your testosterone. If you take statin drugs for your cholesterol, you have a very low cholesterol, you'll make less testosterone. So fixing your cholesterol naturally is a better choice than taking a statin drug if you have borderline or lower testosterone, because you want your testosterone to be as potent as possible.
Okay,
so,
there.
You got there, Bill?
I was going to say, you ready for a call from Susan?
Sure.
Hey there, Susan.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I have white spots, like untanned spots on my legs, little bitty spots. And I remember Edith said something about using Head and Shoulders shampoo or something on something like that. It's like where it's not tan.
Yeah, so how old are you?
70.
Okay, so as our skin ages, especially in Florida, solar damage occurs to the skin. And what happens is it damages the melanin-producing cells and makes them look funky, so our body attacks them. The white spots are where your immune system is taking away precancerous cells, and it's not coming back. You don't have melanin production there anymore, more likely. That's what those tiny white spots are about. That's sun-damaged skin working towards a precancerous kind of condition.
Oh, okay.
So get your sunblock out and take your green tea, because green tea really helps to reduce the amount of skin cancer, and so does sulforaphane, which comes from broccoli. And those two chemicals are really shown to turn back skin cancer, as well as vitamin
D3. What's the second one?
S-U-L-F-O-R-A-P-H-A-N-E, sulforaphane.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Well, Dr. Fred, we're down to about a minute. Anything you want to tell folks about next week's show to tease them a little?
Let's see. I think, what are we going to do next week? And maybe more on the longevity issue. I still have so much coming from the conference 2 weeks ago. I was going to look at obesity and dyslipidemia was my plan. I think we'll probably still go with that because it's really important.
Sounds like a good one. Look forward to hearing that and remind everybody they've been listening to the Health and Nutrition Show with Dr. Fred Harvey here on WMNF Tampa, 88.5 on your FM dial. So stay tuned for 5 minutes of NPR News, followed by Sustainable Living with Grace Banky and Kenny Coogan. Anything you'd like to add on out there, Dr. Fred?
Have a very healthy and safe week, everybody. Get masks on. Please get your masks on. Have a great week.
All right. And you too there, Doctor. And I'd like to take this moment to give a special thanks to Lamar for handling the phones and making sure y'all got heard today. So until next week, thank you for supporting and listening to Health and Nutrition with Dr. Fred Harvey here on WMNF, Tampa, St. Pete, Clearwater, and around the world at WMNF.org. Your community conscious radio station. Stay safe, stay thoughtful, and know that you are loved. You've been listening to a pre-recorded special encore presentation of Health and Nutrition with Dr. Fred Harvey here on WMNF Tampa. Stay tuned for 5 minutes of NPR News, followed by Sustainable Living, hosted by Tanya Vidovic and Grace Banky. Their guest today is Josh Jamieson, the Gardens Manager with HEART, Hunger Education and Resource Training, a place where students, visitors, and volunteers come from around the world to gain practical skills in cultural adaptation, problem solving, and community development for the purposes of meeting the needs of the hungry and the oppressed. I'd like to take this moment to give a special thanks to Clark, who ordinarily would have been handling your calls. But because today's show was pre-recorded, I hope you weren't too bored back there in the phone booth, Clark. So until next week, thank you for supporting and listening to Health and Nutrition with Dr. Fred Harvey here on WMNF Tampa, your community conscious radio station. Stay safe, stay thoughtful, and know that you are loved.